Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Friday, 18th of December, 2020. We have an interesting sort of both an interesting day yesterday and then a change of direction overnight. So we closed at a new all-time highs on the major indices in the U.S., but then a sentiment shift very late yesterday on a number of news items. First of those, I suppose, is this the daily news flow around the U.S. stimulus package and whether this is suddenly in doubt because apparently Republicans are seeking to put an end to these Fed programs. This was something that was sort of known was going to happen anyway, or an effort that was known about before, led by Secretary of Treasury Mnuchin to wind down some of the lending programs that, to be honest, when we look at how big their impact was, is probably pretty modest because they weren't that heavily utilized. But the idea was that they could be restarted potentially under the new administration and Janet Yellen as Secretary of Treasury. But now, apparently, Republicans are trying to move to make sure that they can only be restarted if they get congressional approval. And of course, the Democrats are against that. And now we've run out of the time on this stopgap budget measure to keep the government funded that only lasted 1 week. And now they have to do another one as soon as today to keep from a partial shutdown from happening. So basically, it's the usual three-ring circus of political dysfunction in the US, and the markets aren't that happy about it. But of course, it is just a fairly modest move. A couple other news items, Brexit, I'll talk a little bit more about that later, but there's, quote, blocked the negotiations over this fisheries issue. Another direction change from the prior days, all happy sunshine and rainbows on how things were progressing. So that has some concern around sterling. And then finally, there was a, and I tweeted this out on the at Saxo Market Call Twitter account, a U.S. Looking to put 80 plus Chinese firms on its blacklist. That was a story from Reuters that Bloomberg reported on. So that's got some a little bit of concern out in the Asian hours overnight. But what are your thoughts here, Peter? And also, I just wanted to point out, I put up a little bit of a technical slide on the S&P 500 on slide two in today's slide deck. We have the new highs here. They're, it's pretty weak trading ranges the last couple of days, and just noting the divergence in the daily momentum. If you use the RSI 14, if we don't continue to power higher here, it would of course break that trend line on the divergence on the RSI indicator if we do power high. But any thoughts, Peter, on what's going on in this market?
Well, we have a very compressed put call ratio. So the number of calls over puts is it's getting close to some very extreme levels. There are other greed and fear divergent indices out there that is also showing that greed in general is pretty widespread in financial markets. It just really feels like, I mean, as we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, I mean, if you look at the equity market, I mean, if you look at 2 year forward valuation multiples, we really have priced in a significant rebound over 2 years. I mean, it's just, you have to wonder, I mean, what else can be thrown at this market to really, pull it higher? Because, I mean, so much of the future expected rebound is already being priced in there. So that's a little bit of a difficulty for me to get my head around. And then I think it was very telling about what market we're in with Tesla, I think reaching a new all-time high on the close, at least the highest closing price ever yesterday. And at the same time, you had the Citron Research, the short selling reselling firm, saying that DoorDash, I mean, trading at 19 times sales should only be trading where the competitors are, Grubhub and Uber Technologies and Postmates, which were closer to, I think, 5 times sales. So they should be trading at $40 per share instead of 150. And I think it just tells you everything about this market. And we have 100 years of data suggesting that IPO stocks typically do pretty bad on in aggregate. And now we sort of the conventional wisdom and the narrative in the market right now is that the, I mean, IPOs are just the best ever that are coming to the market. It's an extraordinary opportunity, blah blah. And so that's I just feel like I've been positive for so long, and I still am to some extent. I still think there are a lot of stimulus coming, but I do also think it's worth pointing out some of these ludicrous pockets of the market when they arrive. And I think the what's happening around the IPOs
Yeah,
seems
do you,
crazy.
just winding back a little bit to that Tesla comment, it was an all-time new high close,
Yeah.
655. and this inclusion in the S&P 500, is it of course with that there has to be a huge scramble to purchase these shares if you want to be in the index, and if you get an ETF broad exposure to the S&P 500, that has to include Tesla shares. Do we this is, I'm not looking for a trade recommendation, but do you think this Tesla potential stops sort of the day or around the day or not long after this inclusion date, which if I'm not mistaken is Monday?
It's on Monday, yeah. I would not be surprised. I would not be surprised. Also, as we have talked about, I mean, Tesla's market value is now, I mean, it's priced as it will take over the entire car industry's future with EVs, and the other companies are just aggressively ramping up. So it's going to be, I think it's going to be two very interesting years ahead of us with Tesla, with increased competition. They have had the playground for themselves for so many years. I mean, there were competitors, but they're so inferior to Tesla's cars that it was not even real competition. But that's coming now, and it's going to be super interesting, I think.
Yeah, but definitely. All right, and then finally, just to wrap up on the comments on divergences and small things that are have us a bit cautious here. If we look at slide three in today's slide deck, we put on and apologies for the poor chart. I'm having troubles with Bloomberg's charting system. It seems like I used to be able to stretch the axes a bit better, but you can see the blue line of candlesticks is the S&P 500, where we've posted this moderate new high yesterday, as indicated. But the VIX, which is the larger which is the orange candlestick series there, is not back towards the lows towards 20. So it's still elevated, relatively speaking, at 22. And that's a divergence that you've classically seen in the past around some market tops. So just another small warning indicator there. And then across other markets, we're seeing the weaker dollar led by something like Aussie, where we've seen, and I have this on slide four, just an incredible ongoing ramp up in iron ore future prices in China. This is leading the way for Aussie. So it's able to sort of power through this whole round of concerns and trade frictions with China, between specifically China and Australia. But I think this US-China situation also impacts Australia in the end as well, because of Australia and the US's security and foreign policy arrangements. You're trading Aussie dollar, but you're also trading to a degree Chinese iron ore futures when you're trading this pair. And we did see it consolidate rather sharply overnight, and that almost full overlapping price action from the prior day's strong bar to me suggests there's a lot more risk of some two-way price action here. Elsewhere, as indicated, sterling back on its back foot suddenly again after trying to power through stronger because we have so-called blocked negotiations. It is this the difficult fisheries issue, and the sort of the energy in the news and the comments yesterday from Prime Minister Boris Johnson and the other side did not sound very good, and were at odds with the prior round of suddenly, it appeared things were moving in the right direction. So I have just I'm almost sick of hearing myself comment on this. Perhaps you are as well, listeners out there. Let's see what happens. Certainly, two-way risks are quite large. For sterling versus the dollar, 135 is sort of the fulcrum. If we get a continuation of this reflation trade, risk appetite remains happy. We get a Brexit breakthrough with no tariffs on UK goods, etc. Suddenly we're powering towards 140, 142. If we get the opposite and the markets go into a bit of a funk in the early new year, early in the new year, we could see who knows, 125. In cable. So I think the risks are large, and they're large in both directions. Position accordingly, be careful in spot, consider options trades perhaps out to mid-January as a way to trade the situation or hedge against exposures. What else do you have for us here, Peter? There's quite a bit going on news-wise in equity land. I see you've pulled up a FedEx chart after their, oh, was it their earnings out, or they just had a
Yeah, it was earnings.
earnings release yesterday?
Yeah, it was their earnings, and it was their fiscal year 21 Q2. So they're not following the calendar year. They had adjusted earnings per share that was at coming in at $4.83 against $4 expected. So and revenue also beat on expectations, and despite of very strong results, the shares were down 4% in aftermarket trading, and it all came back on a talk about margin squeeze. They have seen costs rise pretty significantly in their ground segment, and they say it's uh, it they're ramping up and building out infrastructure to meet demand. So they expect the margins to come back up again. You can see the margins in the little small insert there, the green line. And don't be confused that it says that the latest data is from Q4. It's just that the Bloomberg's graphing tool on the or graph tool on them. Our fundamentals follow the calendar year, but as you can see here, we've come down significantly from that very, very strong Q2 2020 quarter where it had an EBITDA margin of 18.5%. But they expect it to come back, and they also said that they're going to raise prices. And I think that's actually an interesting signal, and couple that with the again elevated copper prices. Copper prices surging past $8,000 per ton in Asia trading. I know there's a lot of it is also driven by speculation in China, but nevertheless, I mean there has to be some at least physical demand behind it. And I just find it interesting that you have logistic companies that wants to raise prices. You have all the chaos going on in shipping. I know that's mostly a logistical issue and probably will normalize throughout next year. But it just feels like there's a lot of pressure building in the global supply chain and commodities. We're preparing these new theme baskets and theme lists for our clients next year. And one of them is the commodity sector, where we have found 40 companies, and that basket actually has done pretty well this year. So I think it's that basket is up 21%. So that I think there is a lot of things going on, and we just wanted to flag. And I also put in a small insert, John, on headline from Forbes a couple of weeks ago, where it says that FedEx is really preparing for an all-out war with Amazon. So a lot of things is going on in e-commerce and logistics.
Wow, a hot war with Amazon doesn't sound like a good place to be. Because I think logistics wise, we can all agree Amazon's done a pretty impressive job in recent years.
Oh, yeah.
Let's look at Vestas. This is just a stock that's been so popular, hitting on all the themes that we're talking about, and pricing in an awful lot, I guess, for the green energy shift in coming years. So we see the price chart there on slide six, where you've just seen, I'm not sure I can make out all the prices, but from 500 at the lows in, and that's in krona, 500 at the lows in during the spring. To ramping above, what is that, 13 or 12, 12, 1300 per share.
Yeah.
Just an incredible move. What's the latest here? How much of that is driven by what's in the pipeline and what's just a rotation into the space?
I think a lot of it is
in rough estimates.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is based on expectations and multiple expansion. So I think the clear I think the clear signals we're getting from the EU on the green transformation and the push definitely will there will be a lot of money dripping on Vestas from the EU's push. So that's so you could argue that, and as you said, that it's really just riding this phenomenal rally we've seen in global energy stocks. And Vestas is the world's largest wind turbine maker. They I don't think they are number one in the offshore wind part of the industry, which is the most exciting one, at least as I see it from what people are talking about in growth investors. They're really looking at the offshore as sort of the future potential, because you the sort of we live on landmass, and you have the agriculture sector, et cetera, and you have forests and nature. So there's limited landmass where you can put up traditional wind turbines. So we're moving everything to offshore. But the key story here, and why I've highlighted it, John, is that they were acquiring a 25% stake in something called Copenhagen Infrastructure Partners, which is, I think, one of Europe's largest within renewable energy and offshore wind parks. So it's they invest and develop these energy projects. And as I've highlighted with red, you can see the argument for why Vestas is buying into this company is that they want to seek and create value across a wider range of the renewable value chain. And I think the reason why I'm highlighting this is it's brilliant by Vestas in the sense that I've always argued that you need to change yourself as a company over time and never stick to your old narrowness. So it's like we just talked about Amazon. They could have chosen to just have been a very simple book e-retailer, but then they expanded into everything. And it's the story. I mean, it's the same. I mean, it's in the old days, if railroad companies have thought themselves as a transportation company, that would have naturally morphed into full-blown global logistic companies across all transportation forms. So that's why I think actually it's a smart move by Vestas. Try not to be only a wind turbine company. It comes with a lot of risk because there's a lot of different other energy sources you can tap into. So that's why I'm highlighting it.
That is very interesting. And then on your next slide, talking about the crypto space, which has gotten an awful lot of interest with a huge ramp we've seen in the last couple of days to above 23,500 yesterday for Bitcoin, the crypto space, and this exchange Coinbase filing for an IPO. What's the first to really first in the industry to do something like this?
It is the first in the industry, and shame on me for not remembering the other name. There was a big Chinese, which I think was a part exchange and crypto miner that actually filed for an IPO in Hong Kong a couple of years back, and that IPO actually failed, and that I think it came around some of the big declines that was happening in Bitcoin. But this time around, Coinbase, I think, is probably the best well-known brand in the industry, is filing for IPO. For now, it's a confidential filing with the SEC, so we have zero numbers. The only thing we know is that there was a financing round done by Tiger Global Management in 2018, valuing the company at $8 billion, and the value have definitely gone up since. So if I was to put on a rough estimate based on Bitcoin prices and IPO sentiment and that old valuation, I would probably be thinking that this Coinbase is going to be IPO'd at a valuation somewhere between $30 and $40 billion.
That's incredible.
Yeah, and I
it's
think
not
it
hitting it. They couldn't time it better, you could argue.
No,
Yeah.
it's the perfect timing.
Yeah.
And I actually agree with some of the inserts I've put in on here on slide seven from different media that it is a huge milestone for the crypto industry, and I think it goes hand in hand with a lot of the recent comments from a lot of very well-known and well-respected institutional investors in the U.S. saying that they firmly believe in the crypto industry as an alternative or parallel system to our current currency system. So, yeah, we will be following this closely. And I can also announce actually that we have some resources joining us early next year. So we'll be ramping up with much more focus and much more analysis on cryptocurrencies from our team side early next year. So
Great. Yeah.
So look forward for that.
Great. All right. Let's takes us to the calendar. Not a lot to close out the week. We do have the Russian Central Bank key rate announcement. You almost wonder if they would be tempted to cut rates, given how strong the run the ruble has had, but there's no expectations of that. And I'm sure there's going to be some concerns around sanction risks as the new Biden administration takes charge in about a month's time. Canada October retail sales, a minor thing later. And then next week, we start to wind down into the Christmas holidays for the US and Europe. But a couple of bits and pieces, Chinese rate announcement on Monday and the Turkish rate announcement on Christmas Eve. So stay tuned for that as well. PCE inflation could be interesting next Wednesday for the US for November. For now, I think we'll call it a day, and we will be back. Have a great weekend, of course, and we'll be back Monday with one of our last podcasts before the holiday. We haven't fully nailed down how many more we're doing, but we'll have some special editions as well for you to keep you entertained over the holidays if for some reason you need that entertainment from our side. For now, take care, and we'll be back Monday with the Saxo Market Call.